And good evening once again. Welcome to the Denny Smith Show. In just a minute, I'm going to take you back to February 20, 1962. I was in the fourth grade at Arthur G. Newby School No. 2 in Speedway, Indiana, and my fourth grade class was going bonkers about the space race. For those of you who don't know about the space race, the USSR, what we called the Soviet Union, had put a satellite into space. It was a full 70-pound payload in the late 1950s. The United States had failure after failure after failure in the 1950s. When it came to the space launch projects, we were just not good at it. But then came the right stuff, the Mercury astronauts, the ones that we called the right stuff. On February 20, 1962, our next guest was stationed on board a very special ship. It was the USS Randolph, and his job on that ship was one most of us are not familiar with. In fact, I did not know that there was even a job like this. Our guest name is Ed Munch, and he joins us now by phone from Florida. Good evening, Ed. How are you?
Good evening. I'm just fine. Thank you.
It's good to have you. Ed, before we get to your job on the USS Randolph back in 1962, take me back to when you were 17 years old. The nation was wrapping up World War II, and you had just graduated from high school. How'd you end up in the Navy?
Well, I had thought about joining the Navy for quite some time. I had an uncle in the Navy, and my cousin's husband was a pilot in the Navy, so it seemed like the logical choice for me. I was in the printing business. I worked after school in a print shop, and then I knew the Navy had print shops on some of their ships, so I just thought there might be a wild chance I could get into something like that.
Now, where'd you grow up? I'm not sure this accent. It's definitely East Coast, but I can't narrow it down. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town, Belleville, New Jersey.
Okay.
Not too far from New York City.
All right. Now, most of us, you know, can't. You're 83 years old, so that means you're born
84 next week.
84 next week. Well, we'll have to sing happy birthday to you at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Did most young men in high school just figure that they're going to end up in the service back in the 40s, or were there other options? Was it a foregone conclusion that you got out of high school and you're going into the service?
Well, most of them did. In fact, a lot of them went in before graduation. And but there were some opportunities in defense industries, but they were naturally slowing down, and it was just a great opportunity for a lot of young men.
On the phone with me this evening is Ed Munch. And now Munch is spelled a little bit different. It's M-E-U-N-C-H. Ed found himself in 1962 smack dab in the middle of history, and we will get to that in just a second. But right now we're sort of joining him early in his life. Graduated 17, joined the Navy. You joined the Navy. What was your first assignment in the Navy, Ed?
Well, the first assignment was several schools, and I ended up, instead of being a printer, I ended up being a parachute rigger.
A parachute rigger?
Yes.
Those are pretty important fellas.
Oh, yes. We did not only parachutes, but all types of life-saving equipment, pressure suits, exposure suits, oxygen masks. So it was quite a responsible job.
Now, there's a story about graduating from parachute rigging school. Is that true that you rig your own and jump?
Oh, yes.
All right, tell me about that. Did you do it?
Of course. At that time, I don't know how things are now, but at that time, when you got about halfway through school, you were proficient enough to pack your own chute. Of course, it was very closely supervised, and then they took you up to about 3,000 feet, and
did they push you, or did you did you jump?
I was about, I think, third or fourth man in the stick, and when it came time, when they got over the drop zone, I just put my head down, and the fellow in front of me in his backpack, and when they said go, my feet were just moving, and I just went.
A good soldier does what he's told. Now, did they teach you how to? I mean, I have seen pictures of people jumping off of maybe 5 foot, 6 foot jumps, and
right.
And
we had all that type
all that training.
Training, so we were well prepared for it.
On the phone with me this evening is Ed Munch. Ed found himself in a place in history as a chief master of arms, which is known as the sheriff of the ship. And he was the chief master of arms of the USS Randolph, which is an Essex class. I want you to tell me about this ship that you run. It was Essex class, and it came in just at the end of World War II, or did it see service in World War II, Ed?
It saw service at the very end of World War II. In fact, if I recall, they were hit by a kamikaze pilot.
Oh, my gosh.
And but it had several careers after that. It was modified several times, and when I was aboard, it was classified as a anti-submarine carrier. In other words, most of the aircraft that we carried were equipped with electronic equipment to search out submarines. And we also had helicopters aboard for the same purpose.
Ed, when you joined the Navy, did you ever think you were going to go full term to retirement? I mean, you were in for 22 years. You joined in 45. Is that what you'd planned to do all along and make a career of it?
No, not really. I thought, like I said earlier, when I got through with my first cruise, which was what they call a kiddie cruise, you sign up to your 21st birthday, I thought I would come out and go to some school on the GI Bill and go on from there in the printing business. But the Navy was treating me good, and I was enjoying it, and I really saw a lifestyle that I could adjust to, and I thought I could advance in. So,
it sounds like we haven't even gotten to the best part of the story. Chief Master of Arms Ed Munch from the USS Randolph, who 50 years ago was the ship that picked up our very own John Glenn, the first man to circle the globe as from the United States. Now, before we get to that point, on how many different ships in those 22 years did you serve, Ed?
Oh, I would say I can think of 7 or 8 offhand. But
were they all different? Were they destroyers, battleships?
No, they were all carriers.
All carriers.
Right.
And was that because of what you were doing as a rigger, as
yes.
a parachute rigger?
Yes.
All right. Now, in 1962, you were on the USS Randolph, the carrier from the World War II area. How long had you been on the Randolph in 1962?
I'd say at least a year and a half.
I'm not stretching your memory too much. All right. That was 50 years ago when you were a young man. All right, at least a year and a half. Now, as chief, I got to tell you, as chief master of arms, I had never heard of that rank. Now, were you enlisted or were you officer? What was your rank?
I was a senior chief petty officer.
Senior chief petty officer. All right. What is the responsibility of a chief master of arms on the USS Randolph?
You're listed as a special assistant to the executive officer for the enforcement of ship's regulations and good discipline.
You're the sheriff.
Yeah, I'm the sheriff. And that also involves escorting dignitaries.
And we're going to get to that fun part here in just a second. Eddie, my grandfather and my uncle were in the Navy. My brother, Tom, was in the Navy, but he was a corpsman in Vietnam, and he was assigned to the Marines. But from their stories, I know that there is some mischief accomplished while they were in uniform, but I never remember them talking about getting caught or dealing with military police. Were you technically in the military police?
No, not technically. No.
All right. So what type of rules and regs were you expected to enforce on board ship?
Well, I was just going thinking about some of the things that happened, and occasionally we had people that were derelict in their duties or late returning for liberty. They disobeyed lawful orders. They were late for watch or places on the ship they should have been. And occasionally, I will say occasionally, when we're in foreign ports, we sometimes had young men come back aboard that were a little disorderly.
Now, listen, as stupid as this might sound, I have to ask you, I know it's my own ignorance, but were there lawyers on board ship, or is military justice more swift on board ship? If somebody screwed up, I assume you'd arrest them.
Well, we had a legal officer, but a lot depended on the offense. If it was something minor and a first time, usually the division chief or the division officer would take some action and be unofficial. If it was a little more serious than that, there was a chain of justice, just like you have now in the court system. The first official level was what we referred to as captain's mass. You were brought up before the captain, and you were charged with whatever the offense was, and he had certain limitations of what he could, what level of punishment he could give.
Well, he was the captain. Is it true that the captain can do just about anything on the captain's ship?
Not really.
Not really, okay.
And it varied whether you're in port or at sea. At sea, he could give out the maximum of 3 days' bread and water.
Oh, my gosh. I thought that was just in the Smith family when Dad was mad at us. Oh,
no,
my gosh.
But actually, it wasn't that bad because you usually didn't get sent to the brig till like sometime in the early afternoon. That counted as one day. Then you had another full day, and the third day you got released about 8 o'clock.
There you go. Joining me this evening, Chief Master of Arms Ed Munch, who had served on the USS Randolph before his retirement. When we come back, we are going to get a little bit deeper into this story. The USS Randolph had the wonderful task of gathering up the capsule Friendship 7, in which John Glenn circled the Earth 3 times. Now, we're going to get to that story and what took place. We're going to learn a little bit more about Andy of Mayberry, Ed Munch, who served as sheriff of the ship, when we come back right here on 93 WIBC. And good evening. My name is Denny Smith. Welcome to the show, and welcome to 93 WIBC. Joining us once again from the great state of Florida, Ed Munch, who is Chief Master of Arms of the USS Randolph. The USS Randolph was the pickup carrier for a lot of the ships in the space program, specifically the Mercury program. And Ed is going to tell us that story about the pickup of John Glenn in just a second. But Ed, I got to ask you: tell me about the brig. Was there really a jail or a brig on board the USS Randolph?
Oh yes, we had a brig. I don't remember exactly how many cells we had, but the brig was manned and by the Marine detachment we had aboard. We had a small Marine detachment. And one of their jobs was the brig. But I had to inspect it every day as part of my duties and part of my reports at the end of the day to the executive officer as who was in the brig and what the condition of the brig was. And
was it below deck?
Way
below deck?
Right. It was below decks, but they come up periodically for an exercise period and so forth.
Now, I want to get back to this bread and water thing, because I've heard about guys being on bread and water. I'm assuming, you give them a half a loaf of bread and a bucket of water, and that's it?
No, they got, served a little better than that.
Okay.
They got all the bread they wanted, all the water they wanted.
But that's all they got.
That was all they got. But, you know, it was 3 days maximum, so...
Now, Ed, I've only talked to you 3 times now, and I get the feeling you're a nice, easygoing guy. A little bit later on, we're going to find out that you're a fifth-grade school teacher, but I get the feeling you're really a bit of Andy of Mayberry on board ship. Now, just a common-sense kind of guy. Did you carry a weapon on board?
No, I did not.
All right.
But one of my practices was to be all over the ship. I found places on the ship I don't think the captain knew were there.
Well, and that's one of the reasons you were an escort, because you knew the ship as well as anybody.
Right. And, well, I knew, I'd go out in the evening, I'd go to places where down 4 or 5 decks where somebody's on watch or duty down there, and some of them don't look like they've seen daylight in a while.
Did you have some insignia on your uniform?
I just had a badge.
You just had a badge? You mean like a police badge?
Like a police badge. And everybody knew who I was. And I had a corps of petty officers working with me And they all had badges, too. So we were well known.
All right. Now, did I nail you when I said Andy of Mayberry, common sense, easygoing, hard to make mad? No.
I think I've gotten easier going.
You've gotten easier going.
Now, as I've gotten older.
Now, did you get to hire your petty officers, your Barney Fifes? Did you get to hire those guys, or were they assigned to you?
They were basically assigned. Each division would have to furnish so many men, and they rotated after a while. Sometimes some of them only had for maybe 3 months or 6 months.
Now, how were you addressed on ship? Was it just chief, or how were you addressed on ship?
It was usually just chief.
Just chief. Now, did the crew know you by? Were they intimidated knowing that you were all over the ship and that you were making regular rounds to make sure that they were on duty?
After they got to know me, I don't think they were intimidated.
All right.
Because I wasn't looking for trouble specifically. I was wanted to be seen and.
Yeah, I think I understand that. Now, as far as the arrest, if you saw some offense, did you have full authority on the ship to make an arrest and to put somebody in the brig?
I couldn't put them in the brig unless they went to captain's mass.
Okay. So would you haul them up there, or what did you do? You detain them until...
Well, we detain them. We put them on report, write up a formal document, and it would go to the legal officer, and he'd process it up to the chain of command.
All right. Joining me on the phone tonight, Chief Master of Arms, Ed Munch. Ed Munch was on the USS Randolph. Now, the Randolph was originally rigged for World War II. When it came back, or towards the end of World War II, it was part of Project Magic Carpet. And for those of you who do not know what Magic Carpet was, that was how we got all of our men back home. The Magic Carpet was to bring them back. And they made several trips on the Randolph to the Mediterranean to get them back. And later, it was commissioned as an anti-submarine. Now, about how many aircraft did you have on board ship, Ed, for the anti-submarine part of the duties?
I'm scratching my head right
now. There were helicopters, and then there were prop planes.
Right.
I think most of that has been taken over by the P-6 Orions, if I remember right.
Yes, a lot of it has, but taken over by land-based planes. Now, I would say 30 to 40 planes, counting the helicopters, because the anti-sub planes we had were bigger than the fighter planes that we carried at other times.
I was going to say, now, one of the things that the research that I found out about the Randolph is that they refurbished all of the elevators that brought things up to the deck, and they were the most powerful elevators of any of the fleet at the time when they put those up. All right, now let's get to the 1960s. These Mercury astronauts are one by one getting their rides into space, but somebody has to pick these rascals up, and that would be the United States Navy. Did you guys practice picking up things out of the middle of the ocean?
Tell you the truth, not that I know of.
Not that you know of. So you were just given coordinates, you'd show up and look for something bobbing
in
the water?
Well, the helicopter pilots had trained for this.
All right.
So they were different helicopters than the ones we used for anti-sub work. We had a Marine detachment of Marine helicopters aboard for this pickup. We also were involved with the pickup for Gus Grissom before this.
Now, that was the one where supposedly he blew the hatch got blown, and later they proved that it was not he that had blown it.
Right.
That one went to the bottom, and I guess you guys saved him by the skin of his teeth.
Yeah. Well, it was right off the bow. It was visible. You could see most of what was going on. It was amazing.
Now, February 20th, 1962, John Glenn goes up and circles the Earth three times before he comes back down to Earth. Where was the USS Randolph, and were you positioned so that you could see the parachutes when they were coming down?
No, we were not. Actually, we were part of a task force, and there were several other destroyers spread around.
Okay.
They were out of sight from where we were.
Yeah, that's in case, you know,
And at the last minute, they repositioned us, and the helicopters were launched, and John Glenn landed closer.
Yes. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about once we get him back. I think it was the Rolf, the destroyer Rolf, that picked him up. They deliver this capsule on board ship, and that's when your job as tour guide begins. And when we come back, Ed, if I'm going to hold on to you for just a little bit longer, when we come back with Chief Master of Arms Ed Munch from the USS Randolph, we're going to learn about what happened when John Glenn hit the deck. My name is Denny Smith. I am so grateful to find a man of the Navy who was at that point of time, 50 years ago. For many of us, look back, we were just kids. Many of you out there probably have just heard the stories of the space race. It was a phenomenal time. America came together, and all of a sudden, we proved that we could compete in space. But there was always a taxi service, and it is the taxi service that we're speaking with this evening. We could get him up there, but somebody had to bring him home. When we come back, more of Chief Master of Arms Ed Munch from the USS Randolph on the Denny Smith Show, right here on 93 WIBC. Ed, good evening. Welcome to 93 WIBC. My name's Denny Smith. I appreciate your company this evening. Joining me on the phone is a retired Navy man. My family were all Navy people, and when I found out that the Chief Master of Arms of the USS Randolph was available by phone down in Venice, Florida, I thought I'm going to have to take advantage of this. Ed Munch joins us once again. Ed, thank you so much for sharing your time and your knowledge and your recollections of this great moment in history. It's been a pleasure to have you. Now, I want to ask you a question. You were the sheriff of the ship. Now, that means that you got a badge. Do you still have that badge? Did they let you keep it?
No, I gave it to my daughter.
Oh, good.
My daughter is a watercraft officer for the state of Ohio. So I gave it to her for...
Well, that's sort of cool. That's a good move to do it while you can still do it. Ed, let's go back to the 1960s. These Mercury astronauts are getting their gigs, they're getting their opportunity. You guys are plucking them up out of the sea. And then all of a sudden, the Rolf transfers the Friendship 7 space capsule of John Glenn that has orbited the Earth three times. I mean, there was a lot of enthusiasm. I was a fourth grader at the time, and I can still remember just how excited we were that we saw, you know, we all participated as just young kids in this process. Now, all of a sudden, John Glenn shows up on deck of the USS Randolph. Did he come in by chopper?
Yes, he came in by... helicopter, yes.
All right. So then they took the capsule and just dump it on deck, or did they put it on dolly? What did they do with it
the capsule came in a little bit later, and they had a special dolly on a flight deck. I'm guessing it was probably about 16, 18 foot square, and it was decorated. One side said the USS Randolph, and the other side said Task Group Alpha, which was the task group of all the ships under control of this one admiral. And they kept moving it around. So one time the photographers would get a picture of with the Randolph, but no, the admiral wanted to move, so Task Group Alpha showed up.
Smart out. The admirals always know where the publicity is. Well, that brings up another question. Were there a lot of dignitaries on board? You know, this was our first orbital flight. Grissom's was suborbital, but it was John Glenn that made the three passes. Were there a lot of people on board ship that weren't normally there?
Oh, of course. There was loaded with media people, photographers, television crews, and... I think they either drew lots or assigned certain spots where they could be. And there was a little conflict between the television people and the still photography people, because in those times, television cameras were pretty big rigs, and most of them were on dollies, not like nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it over your back. There was a little confrontation between some of the people there. You stepped in front of me, you know, that's my spot.
So were your crew, your petty officers, were they involved in what I'm going to call security or busting up the squabbles, or did you just let it happen?
It wasn't, everything was resolved, I would say, in a gentlemanly fashion.
Now, I've got to ask you a technical question. You know I'm a plumber by trade, but I've got a couple of questions. On deck, if there are cameras everywhere, especially television cameras, are there electrical, I'm going to call them outlets, but for these television cameras, were you rigged for video downloads and for a power on deck for these news people?
Frankly, I'm not aware of how they were powered.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Now, you, as your job as Chief Master of Arms, it's my understanding that it was, since you knew every nook and cranny of the ship, that you were the tour guide. Now, did you get to give John Glenn a tour of things, or were you assigned to John Glenn?
Well, the first thing when he came aboard, we had to take him down to a decontamination station. There was a special Airstreamed trailer on the hangar deck, which was supposed to be a decontamination station, because nobody knew, you know, what was going to happen. So we, as a matter of procedure, he had to go there first.
Was he still in his spacesuit?
No, he was in a flight suit.
In a flight suit, okay. And so, well, did you guys, did you try to isolate from him? For instance, when he came off the chopper, did you greet him with a traditional handshake man-to-man, or were you not supposed to touch him?
No, we didn't do, there was none of that until after he had this decontamination procedure, even though he, you know, had been exposed. But it, they wanted to go through the whole protocol for obvious reasons.
I asked you earlier when I talked to you today if you had ever heard of this fellow named Smokey Dunn, and I figured out why you didn't know who he was, because he was assigned to the Marine Corps, and he was brought in special as the debriefing, part of the debriefing team. He was actually a cardiologist, and skeleton Smokey Dunn was, as I understand it from the Marine Corps, was the one who was supposed to say that John Glenn was either safe or not safe. And so now I couldn't figure out why you didn't know who Smokey was. Well, you didn't know who Smokey was because he was part of that team that came in with the Airstream. And right. So there must have been a lot of those type of guys. All right, at what point did you get to really engage with Glenn? Did you, were you ever able to greet him as you were fishing, you know, sending him around the ship?
Well, one of the things that happened, we ended up at the forward part where the captain's cabin was and the admiral's cabin was, and there was most of the dignitaries were up there.
Now, when you say dignitaries, are you talking about military dignitaries? Or
military
were there...
and the leading press people.
Okay.
All got a chance to have a shot at him.
Now, were you essentially a bodyguard for him? Were you standing by him?
At times.
Okay.
Right. He was looked like he just hopped in off the street. He was, you know, jolly, joyful. Easy, seemed so easy to get along with. He was happy, and everybody else was happy, too.
How was John Glenn received by the crew? Did he get a chance to either address the crew, or did the crew, you know, were there any...
No, he didn't get a chance to address the crew, but anybody he met in passing, or you know, well, he was very appreciative and very easygoing, very congenial. We had a little almost a comic episode early when he came aboard. They had special meals prepared for him, and special cake made for him, and somehow after the visit to the decontamination trailer and so forth, he was asked about this dinner, and he more or less blew it off, and I don't know if it was miscommunication or what, but it ended up the cake got put out for the crew on the mess deck.
Oh my gosh. And the special cake was gone.
Yeah, well, later on, we're up forward with the, like I say, at the admiral's place, and some junior officer mentioned, well, Colonel Glenn, we have a cake they made special for you down the mess deck, you know, and I'm trying to get the body language that there is no.
So what you're saying is that as soon as
he said, let's go down and find it.
Oh,
so we made a tour of the ship down to the mess deck, and sure enough, there was no cake.
So what happened when he said he wasn't hungry? It didn't sound good. Then the crew devoured the cake because you guys don't get cake. And then later on, some knucklehead junior officer who never knows what's going on anyway.
Aboard aircraft carriers, they're quite frequently baked cakes. You know, every 1,000th landing or every 1,000th takeoff or something like that, they always bake a big cake. You know, it's a good morale booster, and it's just a neat thing.
Well, did you ever get to shake the man's hand? Did you shake John Glenn's hand? Ed?
Yes, I'm losing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you ever remember shaking John Glenn's hand?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. You know, after 22 years in the service in the Navy, what'd you do next?
Well, my last tour of duty in the Navy was at the Parisher Rigger School. I was back to where I started, and I was school supervisor.
Yeah.
And from the young men I saw there and plus other life experiences, I decided to go into education. And I started going to, at that time it was Trenton State College in a teacher's program. And so when I retired, I continued my education, got my degree in elementary education, because I was of the feeling that there was a time when young people were, you know, 10, 11 years old. That was the time where they either were on the right path or they weren't. And I ended up being a fifth grade teacher for the first part of my teaching career.
So which was tougher, a classroom of 30 fifth graders or chief master of arms of 3,000 sailors?
Well, it's a lot different. Like I sort of inferred earlier, I did mellow a little over the years, but I also was known for being relatively strict.
Did your students ever know of your role on board ship with the space program and the USS Randolph? Did you ever tell them the stories?
I told some, but some of the children I had, their fathers were in the service too, so we weren't that far from Lakehurst Naval Air Station and Fort Dix and Fort Monmouth, so there was quite a few military families. So a lot of them understood, and I had parents' night where few of the parents commented, don't be afraid to be strict, you know.
I don't imagine you worried about that too much.
Of course, I got some placement students that nobody else felt they could handle.
And well, Ed Munch,
I felt that was fairly successful.
I think so. 22 years in the Navy, 30 years as a fifth grade teacher, that's 52 years of productive working life. Ed, from one man to another, congratulations on a terrific contribution to the United States of America. It has been my distinct honor to speak with you this evening, and thanks for spending your time with us, Ed.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck to you, and hopefully I will talk to you soon. So good luck to you. There you go. Ed Munch, Chief Master of Arms. He's the sheriff of the ship of the USS Randolph, the ship that 50 years ago this week picked up our very own John Glenn, who is the first man to orbit the Earth from the United States.